Yeah, I was just going to ask, if you were willing to do this, why the hell did I have to get out of bed and come here?
Because Johnny, you're a masochist, just so you know.
I guess. I've been doing this shit for 10 years now, so I must be. I've got someone's topic list here. I just happened to find. I'm not sure where this came from or what it was about, but it's an interesting topic list because it says, this part right here, yeah, topics in big black ink with an exclamation point. And then the topics we've got here listed on the other side, I'll read them in priority. It's fairly neat handwriting. Yeah, here are our topics. Penis. Blue balls. Brony. I just found out what bronies were not too long ago. I think the furries now have someone they can pick on. Cloppers. I don't have a clue, man. Does anyone know what a clopper is? If you do, do I want to know? What? Are you serious? So cloppers is...
Clop is pretty much the brony version of fapping. You know, spanking off and all that.
Yeah, how do you know this?
I run in really fucked up circles.
All right, I'll buy that. Yeah.
As an observer, not a participant.
Okay, no. We're cool. That makes sense. The last one on here is douche. Who wants to explain bronies? Because I don't think I have the fortitude to do that, Ryan. Come explain bronies. I'm not kidding. The furries have now got someone they can pick on.
I know this because I'm in fandom, but I write for the dailydot.com, and we actually have a reporter. Her beat is bronies. That's part of her beat to cover. Like,
dear
it says
God.
It says on her byline, bronies. But a brony basically is like someone who joined the My Little Pony fandom, specifically the cartoon My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, which, if you haven't heard of it, is like the super popular cartoon hit for kids. But it's extremely popular for some reason.
Everyone involved with that thing should be exterminated with extreme prejudice. That's my opinion.
Well, the thing is that, like, obviously the My Little Pony fandom has been around since the 80s, and it's usually made up of small girls and, you know, women who've grown up with the yes. And so, like, now, all of a sudden, all of these, you know, 30-year-old white men have discovered this show and this cartoon.
B has discovered it,
Reddit has discovered it, and they all love it, and they've started...
I love 4chan.
They've invaded the fandom, and there's all kinds of, like, attention being drawn to this because all these 30-year-old men are liking this little girl cartoon. And they have called themselves the bronies because obviously they're bros and they like ponies. So there you go.
Yeah. So let me clarify my previous statement. The bronies I should be exterminated with extreme prejudice. I got no problem with little girls who like cute cartoon ponies. I just our worlds intersect so rarely that it doesn't raise my hackles. But bronies, okay, you're 30-year-old guy. What the fuck, man? Now seriously, what the fuck? Okay, I'm not sure which blows my mind more, the fact they got mad there were girls there, or that they have BronyCon? Are you...
They just had their second year.
I have to ask, where and when is this thing held?
I don't know. I think it was in Texas.
But yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is I'd talk to my nuclear guys and see how quickly we can whip up some fissionable materials and just, you know, take BronyCon off the map. I mean, glass crater, man. Jesus. That's okay. I mean, I don't have a problem. Again, you know, I understand it was appealed to little kids and particularly little girls. But and again, our interests intersect so rarely that's fine. But just the whole brony thing. I mean,
I don't know. It's just a list of questions. My question is, are you serious? A bunch of geeks, girls voluntarily showed up to hang with them and they didn't like it. What the heck's wrong with them?
Any attention.
Keep some
If you've been paying any attention to gaming culture at all this year, which you probably all have, and comics culture, you know that there have been an ongoing series of harassment of women in gaming cultures and comic cultures. We had this whole like online harassment and offline harassment. They had like a demo RPG game that a girl actually had to resign from because during the demo, she kept getting harassed and like by other teammates on her team. So this stuff has been going on forever, and I think the BronyCon stuff has just been sort of like a bleed over into that, where the more women invade male spaces, or what the men see as traditionally their space, the men feel threatened and they basically are reacting in really like vehemently misogynist ways.
Who are the males who are doing it? I mean, is it like young teenage boys basically?
Well, no, I think it's I mean, gaming culture is super misogynist anyway. I mean, just like if you think about, you know, the rape of Lara Croft and earlier this year, and like the way that women are portrayed in games. Like there is actually even a subset. Someone was talking about this at the comic, the Women in Comics panel last night. There's a subset of men who resent the fact that there are women as characters in games that they play. Like, it's not just a specific age range.
Are there any guys here? Okay, are there any guys here who feel that way? Just and not judging. Is it anyone here have a problem with women in gaming or women characters or any? No. Exactly. I mean, holy shit. How long have we been working to bring women into cons? How long have we been working to make conventions not about pale, geeky guys and bring everybody in because that's more fun?
Right. Well, there's been a lot of backlash against like booth babes and so forth, and like Felicia Day actually wrote an article about this for the Mary Sue a while back, got accused of not being a real geek by this guy who was a reporter for a gaming, not Ionum. Destructoid, yeah. He got fired, but...
Oh, okay. It always seems to be a small group of assholes who ruin it for everybody, so since we are not those assholes, but I assume we do like kicking ass righteously, maybe it's time for those of us who like to include people to just start kicking the ass of the assholes who want to harass women and anybody else who's different from them from coming into our culture. Should we start the ass-kicking brigade?
Well, my plan is
In our clan, I've been playing since 1991. If you're a xenophobe, a racist, any stupid, you know, stuff that doesn't, I mean, you could be funny. Don't get me wrong, you could be funny. But there's some stuff that people say are just off the wall. And these are adults. These aren't kids. These are adults. I mean, 30, 40, 50-year-old guys playing these games. What we do is we ban you.
Good.
And eventually they get the message, hey, either they change your handle, get a new handle, and they come in with a new attitude, or we just keep banning them until they finally go away. And eventually, they do go away. And there's a small percentage of people online who have a, you know, hate life, hate themselves. So their own outlet is this online community, and they lash out with these negative, you know, attacks on everybody around them.
I like to think that some of them eventually grow up and... The stuff you see on the Nat Geo and other things about the former white supremacists who are now, you know, trying, you know, they disavowed all that and they're trying to go out and get other people to leave that and, you know, reintegrate into society. I like to think eventually that happens to people who do stuff like that. They grow up, but I don't know. I don't know why this.
Are you
closet optimist, man?
Back to what she was saying. I used to be on senior staff on a pretty big gaming con every year, QuakeCon, put on by id Software. When we first started back in the late 90s, you know, it was a complete sausage fest. I mean, until about 2005, 2006, and it seemed like every year, you know, a couple guys would bring their girlfriends, and then the next year it'd be double that. Well, by the time the last one I went to was in 9, there was about the ratio was almost at that point like 3-1. My buddy just got back in August, and he said there's as many women there now as there is guys. And so it's not all gaming circles are women looked down upon.
Yeah,
like what, like we welcomed women. We had tournaments specifically for women only to try to get them to come in, and the prizes for the women were 10 times better than the prizes for the guys.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and check my speaker list. I have no idea what the male-to-female ratio is, but I think it's pretty even as far as who we've got on the science track, male-to-female. I know Lorraine, Space Track Director, has done in the past a few women in space panels and stuff like that, some workshops. We've had some women in science stuff, too, and seems to go over very well. I, for one, am glad that the Sausage Fest days seem to be on the wane and, for the most part, behind us. You know, I like chicks.
Yeah, so do I. The more the merrier.
Indeed. Well, I feel all warm and fuzzy and better about humanity now, or maybe that's just the caffeine kicking in.
Well,
all right, yeah, next question. Let's see how quickly we can turn this around.
Talk into the mic.
Yes, if you come up and talk into the mic, I won't cattle prod you unless you specifically request it.
I was wondering which...
Oh, okay. Oh, dude, just fix it in post.
I was wondering what you thought about the, Java Zero Day exploit that came out last week, I think.
Keith?
There was a Zero Day for Java last week for that worked through the browser, and it looked for Windows and tried to copy over a DLL.
Yeah, I unfortunately in all the, this is the beginning of the semester, and so we've had like 18,000 students to send on us, so I haven't had time to actually look into it, mm-hmm. other than reading the highlights. And the highlights basically said that somebody found this really nasty zero day that allows people to remote with, by putting some clever Java, very easily to generate clever Java on their website, they can pwn your machine. Bad. And the problem is the release cycle for, since it was just recently, like a week ago, a Java update, Oracle's very slow about putting out updates, and people were thinking, oh my goodness, we're going to be about 3 months before we see another update, and we're going to all have our machines on. Well, actually, Oracle responded in about a week and said, here's a patch. And within about an hour, somebody says, no, it's still got the vulnerability. And so that's pretty much where it sits right now. We're all kind of sitting, waiting with bated breath. We've already started rolling out patches to system to disable Java, which unfortunately is breaking a lot of our business apps. So I think this is going to have some serious fallout for Oracle.
There's a vulnerability in it that affects Macs as well, that it's letting Macs get compromised as well.
I had another question about what do you think about the future of InfoSec when things like quantum computing are coming out, like that can do prime factorization pretty quickly and break RSA potentially?
It depends on how powerful the quantum computers are and how many qubits you're able to flip at once. If it becomes like massive amount, shit's going to get weird. Because at that point, you've got practical, working, strong nanotech as well. And I hope I live through the singularity, you know? It's going to be strange.
One of the things that people fail to realize is right along with quantum computing comes quantum cryptography. So it just becomes like a little arms race. Now, the downside is, and this is something that the military has to deal with when they used to use symmetric codes, this mm-hmm. is back in my day, that if somebody leaked the codes, if they had recorded the transmissions, they could go back in time and decode your transmissions. So that potentially would mean that anything that was encrypted and is in static storage somewhere could be decrypted. That has ramifications we haven't really thought through, but... it'd be interesting if I see true ubiquitous quantum computing within 20 years. It's really, really hard to do.
Yeah,
that's one of those things you can't make predictions about what happens afterwards because it's just totally unknown territory. Good question, though. Yeah. Someone write a science fiction story about that. Next, anyone? I had something funny I was going to say, but I forgot what it was, so I'm going to drink more coffee and turn it over to someone to ask questions. Well, the person walking by looking in the room just lost interest and walked off. We are not amusing.
One thing I did notice when I was here at 9 o'clock this morning, yes, there was a 9 o'clock this morning, especially those of you who were here at 2:01 last night might not think there would be a 9 o'clock this morning, but apparently somebody told me that the Marta was cash only today because of some system.
All week.
Why, in God's name?
It's been like that all weekday.
Mike, because we're recording.
It's been like that all week. They did it as a... they said they did it because they didn't want to overload the system, but I think it's they're worried about a security problem, I think.
So does that mean if you've got one of the MARTA cards that's already charged up, you can't use it? Yeah.
No, you can still use it, but they have machines at the terminals that you can swipe your credit card, put time on it.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
You have to feed money into the machine.
Yeah, you have to actually put cash into it.
Okay, interesting. Does anyone know if Demonoid is back up, by the way?
It's not.
It's still not?
No.
I need my out-of-print gaming fix.
Yeah, well, we've been covering it with Torrent Freak, and the last news we had is still that we're not sure if the Ukrainian authorities raided it, or they just talked to the host, or they just showed an interest to the host, and the host took it down. There's been about 5 different statements.
I was really annoyed when it went down. There are a couple of users who'd been posting a lot of out-of-print H.P. Lovecraft-related, Cthulhu Mythos-related books and some gaming stuff, too, and they were uploading an average of 2 or 3 times a week, and I was going, cool, yeah, I'd never been able to afford this used before. Now I got a nice scan of it. Rock on.
The IRC admin for the network that they use for their IRC channel is actually in the room. He may have more information because he's been more at there more recently, so if he wants to make himself known and has any more information, he can. But if he wants to stay quiet and hidden and secret, which okay. he might well do.
Whichever is cool. Yeah, we can request no pictures be taken. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, so I've got 2 questions.
Your ribbon there, ribbon-ish thing. That's cool.
So one's sort of on the gossipy side, I guess. Just looking for information in the circles about the NSA facility being built out in Utah.
We have
did not know about that. Interesting.
We covered it. Bruce Schneier, whatever his name is, Schneier. What? Whatever. I'll find out when I go through the audio. I mean, because, you know, we'll Schneier. Actually have the audio here rather than maybe 2020 for the Science Tracks audio. But,
Yeah, 2025, just to be safe.
Yeah, okay. But it has come up a couple of times in the panels with him. It's been a frequent question. And at this point, since it's Monday morning, I don't actually remember what was said. I don't remember what my wife said to me an hour ago. I only remember the time because it's in my hand. Yeah. So, but it'll be on the audio. There's been a lot of references, questions, and answers about that by people a lot more knowledgeable about it than us at this point. Maybe Keith actually can remember because I think he's the only one who's still functioning fully.
I'm getting there.
That's because I have an IV drip of caffeine. There, if you go to Wired Threat Level, they have a series of articles with the most information in one spot I've seen on the topic. Whether or not their analysis is correct is questionable because there's so much information the NSA doesn't say. Some people believe the NSA stands for Never Say Anything. So there really isn't a lot of official information, but there as much information as available is available on Threat Level.
Okay, and the second question is sort of a little more basic maybe, but so, you know, Wi-Fi networks at home are the convenience factor, can't be denied, but what are some of the things to do outside of the typical don't broadcast, good passwords, what are some of the things we can do
to have a protected network in the house. And this actually, I guess maybe it does still have a little conspiracy theory concern to it because, you know, it, try to find a router that's not built in China. And so I'm just kind of curious about, you know, ideas, thoughts, you know.
There's no such thing as 100% security, as I'm sure you've heard. Don't be the low-hanging fruit. If you're not broadcasting your SSID, if you're using some sort of wireless encryption that hasn't actually been cracked for, you know, a while now, and MAC filtering, those three real basics right there, and then turn the damn thing off if you're not using it, you're not going to be the low-hanging fruit. So unless someone is coming after you specifically for some reason, then I'd say you can be reasonably confident that you're safe. And, you know, more paranoia, use encryption and VPNs for everything that's going across the wireless as well.
Yeah, that once you do that, we're, as individuals, we're really not that interesting that a government would want to come after us with Stuxnet or something. However, that's, once you've done that, that's not your biggest threat vector. Your biggest threat vector is somebody in your family dragging the Trojan horse inside the city walls, and then we all have a bad day. By the way, does anybody know during the Trojan Wars who the people of Troy were fighting? The Spartans, right. Now, remember what you saw the movie The 300? That's the Battle of Thermopylae. That was an actual battle. They pissed off the entire country when they stole the queen of the Spartans. They had a bad day when that Trojan horse got inside the gates, let me tell you.
10-year war.
Well, that's what, yeah, 10-year war. They held them off. Their firewall held for 10 years. I mean, it was amazing. Their InfoSec guys were great. And unfortunately, the business analysts didn't believe them and said, no, let's bring it inside the gates. And they were pwned. It was your first social engineering attack on a massive scale. And they were pwned really bad.
That was back in the analog era.
Yeah, analog era. So the moral of that story is you can have the most prodigious vault security you can imagine on your network, but if somebody brings something bad inside the gates because they have access, like downloading some cute program they just can't stand to live without, you can get owned pretty handily. And it's amazing, the bad guys
know to
look cute. The
Brony Buddies free game. Whee!
Yeah, yes, exactly.
But of course, the French didn't fall for the wooden rabbit.
Run away! All right, now we degenerate into 10 minutes of Monty Python quotes.
My question was actually about vehicles, with Nevada issuing the driverless car license to Google and more cars having computers in them. I was wondering if anybody had any stories about hacking vehicles or what kind of security that they're using now on those.
I'm just waiting for the inevitable merger of the driverless cars and the military, armed military robots, so we have basically real world Steve Jackson car wars without people. That would kind of rock. I'd never drive anywhere again. I'd be hiding in a bunker somewhere, but it would be kind of cool. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings about the whole driverless car thing.
I have really bad feelings.
I'm excited about the technology and the potential there, but I'm also terrified of the inevitable fuck-ups, and I just don't want to be involved in one.
Yeah, I actually trained as a... I'm educated as a roboticist years ago.
Do we have any small children in the room, by the way? I sometimes, like,
mine's
swear like a sailor out, when I'm tired, and I just want to make sure that... Okay, we're good.
So I'm a roboticist. I used to work on shows like BattleBots as the technical and safety guy. And remember this way. I don't have... my cars are all late 80s, early 90s, because I don't want the systems. I don't want ABS, because... I had a friend, they were coming down from North Georgia a couple of months back from the Warrior Dash. They had a tire blowout. That five-year-old Trailblazer, the sensors screwed up when the tire blew out on the interstate, and it rolled 6 times.
Ouch.
I've had 80s cars have a tire blowout doing 85 miles an hour in the wet. as I'm overtaking a semi, I not even left the lane because I didn't have any sensors that overrode me. So I could control the car no matter what they did, though. It brakes on, off, ABS, stability control.
I just love that terrifying sound.
But that's, you know, sensors mess up, and that's what happened. Because I also, one of the things I had to do when I was training was actually go out with police accident investigators and analyze and test, you know, see accidents and go through them and do the analysis for it with the police.
You ever meet Mark Pauline?
Hmm?
You ever meet Mark Pauline when you were doing the BattleBot stuff? Who
once,
knows?
At 99, I think it was. And the Robosaurus people as well.
Do you ever shake his hand?
No. He sort of said hi, and I then went and crawled under the stage to hold down the 15-inch blades while they started running the robots 3 inches above my head.
Anyone know who Mark Pauline is? Are we familiar with him? No, we've talked about him enough.
Survival Research Labs, the
SRL.org. It is one of the best sites on the interwebs. SRL, survivalresearchlabs.org. This is the guy who was too scary and too dangerous for battle bots and robot wars.
No. He just didn't want to do it.
Even if he'd wanted to, they wouldn't have let him because he's too scary and too dangerous for it. He basically gets very large vehicles, military surplus stuff, builds these gigantic, very dangerous autonomous devices that are armed to the teeth and sets them loose in parking lots to destroy each other as violently as possible, sells tickets to it, and calls it performance art. It's beautiful.
Yeah, things like a 2x4 launcher that launches 2x4s at about 300-400 miles an hour.
So, Jeff, forget that. I like the one that has the power saw blades that flings those at a couple hundred miles an hour. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. He's probably inspired by Pauline. He's been doing this stuff since the late 70s. I think his first ever public performance was, no joke, he had just this unlicensed anarchist put some flyers up in San Francisco, of course. Picked a spot one morning. It was a fundraiser for Jello Biafra, the lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, when he was running for mayor of San Francisco. Video of this exists. And the entire machine performance was this conveyor belt that had the other political opponents rolling by on it, and various knives on automated arms would come down and stab the faces of the other opponents. Then oil would be squirted onto the conveyor belt, and then the whole thing was set on fire. And there was also a roadkill cat that he had found that he had mechanized to crash cymbals and make noise, and there was screaming feedback, sirens and speakers. Set the whole thing up in a parking lot to do the fundraising thing in a gas station. And the video was really fun when the gas station attendant showed up to open the place up, and there's a couple hundred freaks out there and all this stuff is going on. And he's really wanting to call the police badly because he's very confused. And like, no, it's art. It will be done in just a minute. It's for art. You want to let this happen. So that was his very first show. He's just gotten bigger and scarier since then. I saw him do a show out in Austin, Texas, back in the mid-90s, and it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen in my life. They are so scary and so weird, they are banned from performing in San Francisco ever again. Think about that. Think what you have to do to get banned from performing in San Francisco. This is one of the smaller ones, too. It's kind of all, you know, very post-apocalyptic, end-of-the-world type stuff. There's rumors that, what's-his-face, director for Terminator franchise, Cameron, was greatly inspired and stole some of his imagery and mood and feel from SRL. He's known to be a fan of Pauline's. So, he's a maniac. He, when the big military downsizing started after the collapse and breakup of the Soviet Union, and Pauline found out he had fans in the armed forces when they started sending him letters and email and stuff saying, hey, there's going to be a military surplus lot this time, this place. You need to bid on this lot number. and here's what we suggest the bidding range you go for should be, because it's got this list of equipment in it that would be really cool for your stuff. And that's when he really scaled up massively, started adding things like rocket launchers and missiles to the devices. His right hand is really messed up, because before one show, he was making solid rocket propellant, and some of the ingredients were controlled substances. He couldn't get hold of them, but he figured, you know, he knew enough chemistry to know the rest of the stuff would work just fine, so he went ahead and started making the motor cores. Didn't realize the controlled substances were actually stabilizers. So, yeah, he had a couple of them he'd made and gotten out of the molds, and apparently one of them was stuck, so he got a rubber mallet and was trying to tap it out of the mold. Bright flash wakes up across the workspace, and most of his hand is missing, and he said he could see his bones, and it was quite interesting looking, and his hand is very messed up. Either doesn't have a thumb, or they've removed one of his big toes and grafted it on to replace the thumb that was disintegrated. And he likes shaking hands with people because his hand is so disturbingly odd. That's a man who has suffered for his art. He got in trouble with PETA because one of his robotic devices was this big six-legged walking machine that had flamethrowers on it. And there was this little kind of box contraption that would rotate, and depending, you know, it was on a little pivot point. And into the little box-like contraption, he put his pet guinea pig, Stu, short for stupid. And so the robot would walk and fire the flamethrower depending on how the guinea pig moved around in the little box. And PETA went apeshit over that, and his response was, "I don't know what they're so worried about. Stu is in the most heavily armed device in the show. He's not going to get hurt."
He's about the only one not likely to get hurt.
So the audience is in a lot more danger from Stu than Stu is from anything else that's going on. Another interview, they were talking about the occasional injuries that take place when people get showered with stuff like burning phosphorus from the bowling ball sized chunks of phosphorus. They would ignite and launch across the performance space. And one of the comments I remember was, "Well, no one's been killed at an SRL show yet, but we can always hope." Yeah. So anyway, you spend lots of time on SRL.org. This is one of my favorite sites on the net, because these guys are just fucking insane. I'd love to have him here at Dragon Con, but I'm afraid if I showed this to Pat Henry, I mean, the nuclear reactor was bad enough. I showed this to Pat Henry and said, "We need to have this guy here." I'm afraid that's cause for getting permanently banned and then having the restraining order finally filed against me. So, oh well.
Any more questions?
Yeah, enough of my rambling. Caffeine's really kicking in, so I feel awake now. How much time we got?
It's 11:05.
All right. Oh, we're 5 minutes over. Okay. Pee break, smoke break, food break, and we'll pick it up again in 25 minutes next door. I'm going to talk about ideas I've had for how to make cannibalism safe and legal. I'm not kidding. I've heard